This is the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. I am your host, Mr. Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. On the other end of the line, we got Mr. Bill Bupert. What is your radio name, sir?
That would be me. I think that I am the Silver-Haired Snow Leopard, according to the estimable Michael Dean.
The Silver Snow Leopard, for short. Yep, that's it.
Okay.
And this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Bill? Can you feel it?
Man, I can feel it. And I am also at almost the same altitude that you are, joining Michael Dean to philosophically terraform the planet one disobedient serf at a time.
Yeah, but there's a slight difference in our location. What is the temperature where you are right now?
I would say in the house, it's lower 70s. Outside, it is lower 50s.
Yeah, it's negative 15 Fahrenheit where I'm at right now.
Well, that's too bad for you, and I'm not suffering through that, so I'm happy for that.
I saw a great meme recently explaining the differences between the Fahrenheit scale, the Celsius scale, and the Kelvin scale. And it said, it showed what it's like at 0 and 100 degrees on each scale. And it said, Fahrenheit, 0, really cold outside. Fahrenheit, 100 degrees, really hot outside. Celsius, 0 degrees, kind of cold outside. Celsius, 100 degrees, dead. And then Kelvin, 0 degrees outside, dead. 100 degrees outside, dead.
Well, you know what they say. They say that you could teach a man to build a fire, he'll remain warm for a period of time. But if you set a man on fire, he'll remain warm the rest of his life.
Yep. And we are going to talk about, okay, so you use military time, which I call war time. You ever heard it called war time? I like war time.
I've heard it called European time because the continent, that's the time they use.
Yeah. Even like, you know, drunk punk rockers use it there. Like, you know, when we were playing gigs in Germany, all the posters said, like, you know, starts at 2100.
That's right.
So what temperature scale do they use in the military?
Oh, they use Fahrenheit.
It is Veterans Day, so
it is. It's like, you know, Navy parlance would use English measurements, but Army tends to use metric measurements. So the Army will use kilometers, whereas the Navy will employ knots and yards for estimations of speed and estimations of distance.
Yeah, and fathoms for how deep they throw
Certainly.
You under the water when they give you the when they court martial you off a plank. All right, so we're going to get to military stuff. That is the whole topic today. And Bill Bupert is a former U.S. Army officer in good standing. But I want to say this one little thing for my friend Derek Slopey out there. We were talking the other day about open source software and how, you know, it's a great idea. And as capitalists, we like it, even though it doesn't use the we like it because it does not use the fascist, corporatist government protection of intellectual property. But the thing is, a lot of the software that we like is made by, you know, straight up one worldy kind of socialist world community kind of people. Like we're talking about WordPress, and I was talking about how like the guy who invented it, you know, is kind of a San Francisco lefty, and you know, but makes good software. And Derek said, like, yeah, isn't it cool that these leftists make all this free software for us anarcho-capitalists to use? And I said, yeah, they're basically useful idiots. So I looked up this guy, Matt Mullenweg, who invented WordPress, which is what we run our blogs on. Do you run your blog on WordPress, Bill?
I certainly do. It's zerogov.com.
Zerogov.com. I was going to give that out. Yeah, so this young man, guy who's like 30, who invented WordPress, which is the most popular blogging software in the world, and something like 1/5 of the websites in the world run on WordPress now. He is such a statist. Okay, I didn't know this about the guy. I mean, I knew he was a San Francisco liberal type, you know, one worldy. I will bring all the communications of the world together so we can all talk about Obama kind of guy. But In 2002, this is how he started to invent WordPress, was he needed blogging software to upload his pictures after participating in the National Fed Challenge competition. Now, that is even more status than it sounds. The National Fed Challenge is a competition among high school students to write glowing papers explaining why the Federal Reserve is necessary. What do you think of that, man?
Oh, it's just I threw up a little bit in my mouth just thinking about it. The Keystone Keynesians have wrought so much damage in the West, you know, and harnessed to their peculiar Marxoid beliefs.
Yeah. So that's one thing. I have a couple announcements to make and get out of the way. One is that the Freedom Fiends website and all of my related websites are no longer employing the subscribe by email button. So it was causing a lot of problems with the blogging software. So maybe Mr. Matt Mellowegg needs to add something to replace that. But if you were subscribed to the Freedom Fiends podcast version of our radio show, with the subscribe by email, you are no longer receiving those emails. So you should go subscribe to the RSS feed or subscribe on iTunes. And then I have, my new segment is called I Was Wrong. And what I do is I correct anything I said in a previous episode where I said something wrong, because I think it's really important to do this because we want this stuff to be around forever. If you go to the freedomfiends.com website, you can click on the torrent link and learn how to use your computer when you're sleeping or at work to torrent seed the Freedom Fiends to help keep us drone proof, you know, for the next 1,000 years or the next 100 years. Next 1,000 years sounds really, I don't know, religious and or Nazi. So for the next 100 years at least. So I want to correct any mistakes I made. And I misspoke the other day. And Stefan Kinsella, good friend of the show, intellectual property attorney who's anti-intellectual property. He defends people who get, you know, messed with for IP violations. Stefan Kinsella pointed out, I misspoke. I said, we were talking about the Jimmy Carter term, meow. Do you know about meow, Bill?
I do not.
It is the moral equivalent of war. And he said that the energy crisis was the moral equivalent of war, or meow. So, and that term has kind of stuck around, and moral equivalent of war. Have you ever heard that term without the meow?
Well, I certainly have. And of course, governments have to use that because war is their lifeblood in every way.
Yep. But I misspoke, and I said that a boycott is the moral equivalent of war. And I absolutely didn't mean that. I meant an embargo or a blockade. Those are the moral equivalent of war.
Okay.
A boycott is just, you know, people getting together and not buying something. So
it's sort of like people withdrawing their market consent.
Right, right. So I was wrong, and now I'm right because I made it right. And the reason I do that and make a point of doing it is because I want to encourage more people to admit when they're wrong, because I see so many people. I mean, that wasn't really a very important thing. That was me misspeaking. It was just, I picked the wrong word live on the radio. When you're live on the radio, it's very different than pre-recording something or having a conversation that's not broadcast. You tend to, you know, just jam through it. You have to think on your feet. So I made that mistake. And it's really important, I think, to say when you were wrong. And I want to practice doing it with little things. So if there's ever reason for me to do it with a big thing, you know, I have exercise. I have a lot of practice. It's not hard for me. It's kind of like how in AA, you know, your sponsor will say, call me every day just to say hi and tell me how you're doing. So when you're having a bad day and you feel like you're going to go drink, it's not hard. You're not calling me for the first time. You already have a rapport with me. So I want to have a rapport with saying that I'm wrong to encourage myself and others to do that. To be able to say when they're wrong about something really big, which I don't plan to ever be. So,
well, Michael, I really respect that specificity of language. And as libertarians, ANCAPs, anarchist abolitionists, and the whole train of folks who tend to listen to the Fiends, what I really appreciate about it is that intellectually we tend to pursue the truth as a means and an ends in and of itself, whereby on the left, or conventionally speaking from my perspective, the collectivists tend to have to fabricate, dissemble, and lie about their end states and goals that they seek, because no one in their right mind would want to be that way.
Yeah, it's true.
like the latest thing with Gruber talking about transparency and selling us all Obamacare.
Yeah, I know. They said the Obama administration promised to be the most transparent administration ever. And they are actually the least transparent administration ever, including the fact that they have, you know, not just that they're not telling things that people would want to know, but that they're actually actively jailing government employees that are whistleblowers. And I'm not talking about people, you know, on the level of like Edward Snowden, who basically say, here's the man behind the curtain, I have all the documents. But even people that are very pro-government that work in the government, like one was a guy who worked at the NSA, and he said that the methodology they're using to spy on people is extremely inefficient. And somebody else, some other technician there, had offered a more cost efficient method of spying on every citizen in the world, in America, and everyone in the world. And they'd quashed it for internal political reasons. That guy spoke out about that, basically saying, I love that we're spying on people, but we could save money doing it. And that guy got thrown in jail. I mean, that's the kind of craziness going on over there at Obama's administration. And he is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. And so was George Bush, for that matter.
Well, this is Bush's fourth term.
Yeah. Explain what that means for the people in the cheap seats there, Bill.
You know, what it basically means is that the only difference between the parties is the spelling. And as many in this, especially this election wave that we just suffered through, and thank goodness that it's over, where apparently the grand old Politburo got the majority of seats in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, all the forces of freedom and liberty are cheering loudly and bellowing and saying, man, things are going to be so much better. I've got news for them. From 2000 to 2006, the awful office was occupied by the Bushevics, and the House and the Senate were controlled by the grand old Politburo. Freedom did not advance in those 6 years, and freedom will not advance with the new leaseholders of the new plantation owners.
Yeah. You know, I am so such a non-government man these days that's actually news to me, what you just told me. I actually didn't know who'd won what seats, and I feel pretty good about that. And that's a better way to live than being constantly stimulating your limbic system going, oh my God, look what they did today. None of it really matters, man. It all leads to you in a cage anyway, and there's ways to avoid it. We're going to talk about it later on the Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Freedom Fiends, talk radio, musical extravaganza. This is Mr. Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, talking to the Silver Snow Leopard, Mr. Bill Buepert. So Mr. Bill Buepert is, I'm going to embarrass him. He hates it when I give his bona fides, his CV of military service. But it is Veterans Day, and we want to talk about service and about the military. And I want to give his bona fides at the top, you know, each hour, the full bona fides. And then at the top of each segment, since this is radio and people tend to drive and only hear a little part of it, I want to give it at the top of each one. So because he's going to be saying some things about the military that are not, I love the troops, go down and salute the flag and join and give up your life. And the fact that he was an officer in the U.S. Army kind of means you should listen to him if you were in the Army or in any branch of the service, or if you, you know, venerate the military, unless you were a higher level than an officer, then you could tell him to go jump in the lake. All right. So what was your rank, name, and serial number, sir? It's the Geneva Convention. I'm going to torture you with questions. So you have to give your name, rank, and serial number, please.
I retired as a captain in the U.S. Army, which is an 03, and I was an 03E because I was prior service, which means I was a Mustang because I jumped from the enlisted ranks, in which I served 7 years active and almost 10, 11 in the reserves, and then got my active duty in after that as an officer.
Okay, and you have done, since then, you've retired from it also, but you've done some consulting. What kind of consulting?
I have. I've done consulting to include a tour in Afghanistan and some defense-related stuff.
I know you can't give all the info, but in what field? Because I know you've given it before. You can give it, right?
Well, I was a I've been a senior instructor in irregular warfare. I've been a senior advisor on new technological developments like seen-through walls technology and micro UAVs. I've led an architectures team and other stuff.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Drones. Is that drones? Is that micro UAVs? Is the little baby drones?
Well, certainly.
Yeah. Cool.
Variations. You know, there's dozens of designs out there.
You know, my friend Sean got one of those quadricopter ones, you know, like the $500 radio control drones, which are vastly cooler than like, you know, previous model airplanes you could buy. They just basically flew like airplanes. I mean, these things can go up a few thousand feet. You can mount really nice cameras on them. They're not that expensive. They're about $500. And he sent me some video of testing it out. And the second video, like he at first it was crashing into things. And the thing that people do when they're learning to navigate these is they tether them. They put them on like a, you know, 20-foot string or something, 30-foot string. And when I saw it tethered, I felt sorry for it. This is so weird. I was like, oh, fly, little drone, be free. You're tied up. No, be free. Yeah. So tell me about government treatment of vets and what's wrong with it.
I think it's I just think it's God's awful because, for instance, taking the VA as an example in the Veterans Administration, the Veterans Administration shouldn't exist. And what they should do is issue cash vouchers in kind to all of these veterans, whether they're paralyzed, whether they're missing limbs, they've got PTSD, whatever the assigned mental or physical impairment is as a result of serving in the legions to do evil things planet-wide for the U.S. government. They should get the finest care available. I dig that because that was part of the contract, but please don't do it at a government hospital. Because the Veterans Administration is exhibit A of why government health care, especially single-payer health care, can never work and why a Sovietized system of health care delivery is always so bad in the end result and how much money it wastes and how it doesn't serve the clients who are the end users.
You know, the Freedom Fiends are one of the only radio shows on conservative talk radio that are not part of fundraising for the Wounded Warriors Fund. Not that, you know, I'm against it, but I just, we've never been asked. And I don't think I would do it because my whole attitude is why isn't the, you know, if you believe in any amount of government, why is the government doing a poor job that such a poor job that the private sector has to collect money to give them some semblance of decent care?
Well, look how much you pay in property taxes for the local government indoctrination camps and how they always have their hats out for bake sales and car washes and things like that.
Yeah, we're talking about public school there, government school.
Yep.
Anything the government can do, free market can do cheaper, better, and without the aggressive gun to the head that is taxation. But these are embedded systems, and people like embedded systems. They're cozy because they're a mafia.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Lively little number going all the way back to 2011 is Would You Tar and Feather a Tax Collector by my one-man band, Right Arm of Wyoming. And you can Google Right Arm of Wyoming and get all those MP3s for free. And there's some feisty toe-tapping, no government man, punk rock and roll song. So Bill Buppert, retired Army officer from ZeroGov.com, is with us tonight. Now, tell me, Bill, about your dad's experiences with dealing with the VA and that whole system in general.
My dad served in the war to save Joseph Stalin from 1939 to 1945. He was in the last year of the war. He was in Patton's Third Army.
I like what you call World War II there.
Yeah, he died last year. My father passed on to Valhalla. And he lived with us for the past 10 years because he simply couldn't take care of himself. And I was not about to see him warehoused in a nursing home. And he was, since he, his,
I gotta his say, time is, I got to say, go thank you for your service in doing that for your dad. That's pretty decent.
Well, thanks. And we did the same thing for Lilo, my Sainted Bride's grandfather and grandmother. They died at 97 and 95, respectively, in our home of natural causes, of course. But they had a full life. But the last years of their lives were a challenge for them. And we were there to help them. And I just think it's a familial and probably just a gentlemanly obligation of family members to do that. We're like the only culture here in North America, here in these United States, that sort of warehouses these generations instead of putting three, four, sometimes very rare, maybe in Okinawa, five generations under one roof, you know, where they live their lives together in a communal family. And I think there's a whole lot of benefit to that.
That sounds very decent.
It's also the mark of a good civilization instead of the mark of barbarity, which is what the government would have us do here in the United States. So my dad died last year of, we suspect, congestive heart failure and a very catastrophic aneurysm. Well, there were a couple times when I had brought him up to the VA, and while they have big, shiny buildings, the lines there are tremendous. The rationing is tremendous. Misdiagnosis is huge.
And in really expensive chairs, too.
Very expensive chair. Very, you know, it's very expensive everything, but it's OPM. It's other people's money. And you'd think that with all the money they'd have available at their disposal, they could provide you with first-class care and service. But it's bureaucratically impossible for the government to do that. Whether it's your local DMV, whether it's the surly and ill-informed employees at the United States Postal Service or the VA or the IRS, any of these bureaucracies are not set up to service end users and clients. They're set up to service themselves. They're also set up to serve as a way to push the mission they're supposed to solve way into the future so they don't have to go away. Now, my dad was going to die. You know, we're all going to die eventually. And I can't really complain about the care that he got too much, but they did misdiagnose him twice, where they mistook very minor things, which happened to be pneumonia, and we had to take care of that. But fortunately, they tried to pump him full of meds and pills, and for the most part, we do our research. We determine what was best for him, and those things that weren't, you know, he wouldn't use them. And still, I mean, he died at the age of 86, and he had a long and prosperous life. May not have been prosperous financially and materially, but he had a heart the size of Montana, and he was a great dad. You know, I owe him a lot for that, which is why I would make these hour-long trips to the VA with him. And, I'd wait with him, and we'd do all that stuff. But I was underwhelmed by the service. I was underwhelmed by the bureaucratic nightmare that is the VA. The worker bees who worked there, it was a give or take as far as whether they would treat my father in a civil fashion or not. For the most part, they did. But the doctors are very well paid. The nurses are very well paid, but they don't give a crap about the people who are taking numbers in the lobby.
Yep. Tell me more.
Well, you know, what I do think, it's a signal reason why Obamacare simply isn't going to work. I wrote an article, I think it was this year, called Killing Abroad and at Home, Why the VA is Broken, because there was a huge scandal in Phoenix, Arizona, concerning the engineering and manipulation of wait lists to make the quantitative results look better for the staff who work there so they could get their year-end rewards and bonuses as a result of actually putting VA patients on death row. Now, my father served in the war to save Joseph Stalin, and those guys are dying like flies by the year. There's not many left, and there's not going to be many left as these years progress. But if you look at how much the VA spends and such, it's just enormous. I think they are 1/6 of the total federal government workforce. They spend approximately, I think for 2015, $180 billion for their facilities. And it astonishes me that the incompetence, that kind of coarse behavior you saw from the bureaucrats in Phoenix. And Phoenix, by the way, was simply a microcosm of how the VA manipulated numbers across the board. But why do they do this? They do this because they're a government organization for which rationing has to take place, for which death panel. I mean, the VA may be the place where death panels have originated. It may be the place where they first started toying with the idea and saying, yeah, maybe we'll do that. You know, the amputees, the PTSD, the injury caseload, it's massive after these latest festivities in Iraq. Afghanistan and the Horn of Africa. You know, more than 900,000, I'll repeat that number, 900,000 soldiers have been injured in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, the death panel idea, and I think that's a term that was made up by Michelle Bachmann or first used by her, right? Or was it the lady from Alaska?
It could be. I'm not certain who I would who I'd apply to, but it seems to me that de facto and de jure, the VA has employed that, and what happened at Phoenix proved it out.
I think it actually is the influence of European socialized medicine, because the national health, you know, which is directly Stalinistic, you know, like the national health in the UK is the idea of socialism coming from Marxism, watered down, you know, with the communist sheen taken off of it. And the national health does death panels. I mean, basically, you know, if you need a heart transplant, you know, no matter how much money you have, you're not going to get one if you're, you know, 80. I mean, basically, they want to give it to a 21-year-old who's still going to be a tax cattle for 60 years. So,
oh, sure.
You know, and the tax cattle thing, too, I think we should touch on the idea of patriotism and how it's connected to military hagiography and worship of the military and worship of soldiers. There's a really excellent quote from David Friedman, who said, "Perhaps the best way to see anarcho-capitalism would be much more peaceful than our present system is by analogy. Consider our world as it would be if the cost of moving from one country to another were zero. Everyone lives in a house trailer. One day, the president of France announces that because of troubles with neighboring countries, new military taxes are being levied and conscription will begin shortly. The next morning, the president of France wakes to find himself ruling a peaceful but empty landscape, the population having been reduced to himself, three generals, and 27 war correspondents." And they do want to keep you penned in as property, producing tax to take, so they don't have to work or they don't have to really produce anything. And a lot of this is tied into the idea of patriotism, you know, love it or leave it. And then if you try to leave, you know, they take all your money on the way out and call you a traitor. More and more people, even people who have, you know, grown up saying they love America, are leaving and going to other countries. And you may be among them. Is that true?
It is correct. We've been looking at expat opportunities. We did a scouting expedition to the Philippines in January, and we plan on going to maybe Ecuador and Panama in the next 6 months. We'd like to get down there to scout it out and look at the possibilities. It's so interesting where you say, you know, the taxation and such, because what we have here is that if it weren't for war, conservatives couldn't say much at all. And when it comes to taxation, the conservatives and the liberals, the collectivists, you know, as an umbrella term, have used war as a way to increase taxes exponentially, ratchet it up until it's at the point where it is today, where I would venture to say that taxation has reached a point beyond 100% in America.
Explain how that's possible. I believe you, but explain how that's possible.
Here's how it's possible. Right now, we probably pay 70% in combined property taxes, income taxes at the state and federal level, maybe even local and county if you live in New York. And then you're paying your excise taxes, your gas taxes, your inheritance taxes. And then we have a corporate income tax of 38 to 39%, I think it is, one of the highest in the Western world, which is passed on to the consumer and increased prices for goods and services that they purchase. And then we have the hidden tax of inflation. And then we have the additional tax of using unborn progeny as collateral to borrow money into infinity. And then we have quantitative easing. So I think when you combine all of that—
Oh, you missed something.
Oh, go ahead, please.
Well, you kind of touched on it with the corporate tax thing, but also, you know, when you buy the candy bar, the tax on the gasoline and the tires and the road mileage of the truck that brings it to the store, and the electricity, you know, the tax on the electricity in the, used in the store to light the store and more and heat and cool it.
But it's also brilliant, Michael, because it does. It piles on sort of like a value added tax at every level of production. They're taxing that. You're right.
But also, even when you outright own something, you know, you own a piece of property, you're still paying rent on it in the form of property taxes. But even more than that, more and more and more they want to just steal it from you. You know, like there was in Casper, Wyoming here in my town, the town in which I live, it's not really my town. It's Dick Cheney's town. There's a picture of him in every restaurant in town, you know, like dining there. But, you know, they took some guy's, you know, 20 acre ranch outside of town because he had a bunch of old, literally classic cars on his property. They weren't junk. They were classic cars. This guy was like 80. He was in ill health. His wife had recently died of cancer. And they all of a sudden decided they wanted to put a $500 tax on any vehicle sitting in your front yard that wasn't operational. He had like Model T Fords. And or that was unregistered. And the thing was, like, it's hard to register a Model T Ford because there's no original papers still around on it. I mean, literally, they just took this guy's property. This guy, you know, poor, sick old guy whose wife had recently died of cancer. They stole it. They just took it and threw him out in the cold because the county commissioners, you know, because, you know, five people voted 3-2 to take his stuff. And they could do that. So that's really raising the tax rate well beyond 100%. The fact that they can, will, and want to do that more and more. They want to pull you over and steal your car if you have a bag of weed. They want to steal everything, and they do it, man. They're horrible.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends talking to retired Army officer Bill Buppert. You can find out more about him and his thoughts and words and deeds at zerogov.com. That's zerogov.com. And we're talking about the military because it is, for another 8 minutes, it is Veterans Day. And Bill is a veteran. He's a big shot veteran. He was an Army officer. So unless you are higher than officer, you should listen to what he has to say. So I want to talk about patriotism because I'm not very patriotic. I am more interested in the deeds of individuals than the deeds of nations. And I think that being proud of where you come from or what your country has done is false. And it's kind of like cheering for a football team and saying, we beat them this weekend. No, you didn't. You sat on your couch and ate potato chips. And even if you've done something in the service of your country, and this is tricky talk on conservative talk radio, man, because people think I'm a communist or something. I am more capitalist than you, listener. I will say that. I am more capitalist than most people. And I believe in smaller government than most small government Republicans. And I believe in the free market more than most people who say they believe in the free market. And same with Bill. But I want to talk about patriotism for a few minutes because patriotism, the worst things done in history are done under the guise of patriotism, of the religion of the state. And if you are religious, when you are patriotic, you are kicking God off the throne and putting the state above God because you are saying that men who have fancy titles can make decisions for other men and other women. And that's ridiculous. You're making a god out of the state when you worship the state, when you are patriotic. So, and the thing most people don't realize is every country in the world in history has taught their school children from a very young age, we're number one, we're number one, and you should die for your nation. And more and more and more, what they send the young to die for has nothing to do with the nation. It has to do with a bunch of billionaires getting another $1 million here and there. So, Bill, tell me about patriotism, please.
Well, it's not simply the billionaires who benefit from it. It's the neoconservatives. It's these shills like Limbaugh and Levine and the rest of them.
Ooh.
Who rah-rah all of this business of sending our young men and women overseas in these either preemptive conflicts or conflicts that allegedly are in response to dishonors that have been visited on the homeland in the U.S. But in the end, what it turns out to be is simply a money laundering operation for the military-industrial complex and a way to maim and kill brown people, to include a large number of women and children, whether it's drone attacks, strategic bombing, small arms attacks, whatever the case may be. And what the U.S. has discovered is that it's very hard to maim and kill these women and children fast enough to prevent the insurgents from stiffening their resistance and swelling their ranks with every time that happens, so that boogeymen start popping up everywhere as a result of the indiscriminate and just murderous rampages that the U.S. and the West goes on in countries around the planet. If we look back to the Philippines in 1898 to 1905 and the American occupation there, that's where waterboarding comes from. Waterboarding doesn't come from some idea in a CIA agent's head in 2002. It comes from what was actually practiced in the Philippines. As a matter of fact, there was a U.S. general officer on islands in the Philippines who said and put out an order that any male over the age of 10, whether carrying a weapon or not, can be shot on sight. Now, that's barbarous. Now, it isn't only the U.S. that's guilty of this kind of thing. The bloody gore and that bloody kind of patriotism is what the United Kingdom has done, what the French have done, what all the Western colonial powers have done. I suspect the Eastern colonial powers, when the Asians did the very same thing, when you had the Vietnamese fighting against the Chinese, against the Thais, and all the rest of it. When you combine all that together, what patriotism always turns out to be is where the young men go to fight these battles, especially having celebrated the 100th anniversary just a few months ago of the, well, 2 months ago of the beginning of World War I. Awful.
Yeah. And we're not pacifists. I have a loaded sidearm on me right now and a loaded rifle 7 feet away from me. And I would assume you have something like that too, Baha Bill.
Indeed I do.
Yep. We'll be back with hour two of the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza. Veterans Day edition. Although it won't be Veterans Day, at least in my time zone and your time zone in the second hour, but it will be somewhere. It's always, you know, midnight somewhere. So we'll be back to tell you more about how the world works and give you some hopeful redemption in the third act at the end of it, so you don't go to bed and have nightmares, because we don't want you to have nightmares. We want you to be happy, healthy, productive, and out from under the thumb of the state on the Freedom Fiends. Worms. Freedom Fiends. Good evening, good morning, Sundance, Wyoming. Good morning, Belle Fouche, South Dakota. And when the second hour, we not only add those shows, but those stations, but we also can actually be heard at Mount Rushmore. I've actually thought about getting some little portable radios that cost a dollar and having someone tune them to the station that we're on there and handing them out, like going when there's a bunch of tourists there during our show and handing them out to people. Here, we're the docent for Mount Rushmore. Put these on and listen to the truth about government.
That's awesome.
My hour two intro is, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low-orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And we were talking... Well, we're talking about Veterans Day, because it's Veterans Day somewhere. It was, well, it's 7 minutes after now, but it is still somewhere where we're being heard. And Bill's a vet, Bill Buepert, my co-host, Bill Buepert from ZeroGov.com, is a retired Army officer. And we're going to talk about patriotism, and we're going to talk about the government and the military. And we're going to rehash a little bit from the first hour, because we get add some stations in the second hour. But we won't rehash it. We'll retell it in different words, so the people that were listening on the first hour will be able to understand it too and not be bored by it. But a real quick sidestep here. I just sent Bill a picture of the equipment that I use to do this world-reaching show on actual radio from my home. And what were your comments on it, Bill?
I thought it was terrific. It's neat to see that here it is, a rather high-tech enclave that you put together, being the audio file that you are. And the audio expert when it comes to broadcasting, that you've got in your little windowless bunker there in Wyoming, that is actually the World Fiends headquarters for philosophically terraforming the planet.
Yep. I'll put this picture in the show notes of the episode.
You should do too. That.
Yeah. And I hope no one wants to use it as a shopping list to rob me, because I never leave the house and I'm always armed. So it would be, it wouldn't be worth it. There's a couple $1,000 worth of gear, but there'd be a high percentage of chance that it would not end well Because I don't.
They would probably be very disappointed in the lead poisoning that would be incurred.
Yeah, the signal to noise ratio. No, the cost efficiency ratio would be pretty low for the person trying to jack me. Because yeah, I don't leave the windowless bunker except once a year to go to Porkfest, and so I can see if we see my shadow at Porkfest, and if we do, we get 5 more years of tyranny from Obama or Jeb Bush or some Clinton. Although, didn't the Clinton lady step down from the race?
It did not. Not that I heard. I think that the Hillabat is still running.
Yeah. Lady. I called her a lady. That's funny.
Yeah. That's inaccurate.
It is inaccurate. Yeah. Yeah. So we want to talk about statism, which is worship of the state, and how it is counterintuitive to being a person who likes liberty. And it's so weird because so much talk radio is people saying they want less government, more liberty, their rights respected. And then they're just barking for the state. They're saying we need to worship our founding fathers. We need to worship a piece of paper, which was written by a bunch of lawyers arguing over how much of our rights to steal. And yeah, I can hear you moving that mic stand. And we are a teaching hospital. So I point out when you make a mistake instead of hiding it. All right. So, and we want to put this in terms that aren't going to make people upset. Well, it's not really our business if they're upset listening to it, but we don't want to turn people off who are good people who could be helped by this. In the same way that when a sober recovering alcoholic speaks to an alcoholic who's still drinking and his life is spinning out of control, you know, the sober alcoholic doesn't yell at the guy. He doesn't say, you're a drunk and you're horrible and you're immoral. He doesn't talk down to him like that. And, you know, you don't want to plead up to someone like that, like a, you know, abused spouse or a child saying, please get sober for the family, which is, you know, a horrible situation to be in. You know, you look across the table with a cup of coffee there and you look them in the eye and you see eye to eye on the same level. You say, I've been where you've been, brother, and I understand what you're going through, and it's a disease, and there is a solution. And worshiping the state is a disease, and we are here to look at you across the table, listener, to look across the table, brother and sister, and say, we've been where you've been, and it's a disease, worshiping the state. And we are capitalists. We like the free market. We like guns. We like respecting our neighbors. But we don't think that you have to worship icons of the government that's oppressing you to do that. You know, a really bizarre thing to me was that standoff at the Bundy Ranch where you had people being oppressed horribly by the federal government and riding around waving the flag of that federal government saying, get off our property. That is Stockholm syndrome at its worst. It is worshiping the icons of your captors. And why do that, man? Why do people do that, Bill? What's with the patriotism, and why is it deadly to a freedom mindset?
I'm paraphrasing Butler Schaefer, one of the great philosophers of liberty that writes on Lou Rockwell, where he said something to the effect of, those who wave around the parchment as a sign of their freedom are doing the very same thing as the dog that puts a leash in his mouth and comes home.
Yeah, it was about people who carry pocket constitutions, I think.
Exactly. And what this comes out to is you have to ask yourself, what does the war serve? One thing that I'm fond of saying is that the only justified war is the war that you fight on your own soil, because anything beyond that is not. Whether it's the Bush preemptive doctrine, whether it's the business of fighting in continental European wars from World War I to World War II, Asian mayhem in Korea and Vietnam, Hawaiian annexation, the evil stuff we did with the remnants of the Spanish Empire in Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines, and the absolutely monstrous and barbaric behavior of U.S. soldiers in those conflicts, especially in the Philippines. But there's a number of things you have to ask yourselves if you want to strip this down to first principles. You know, am I not free to not pay for war? I mean, what would happen in all nations if the costs of war accrued to those who proposed it and away from those who opposed it? This isn't simply a lefty notion. This is a righty notion, I think it transcends those left-right boundaries to say that you're anti-war. Because when you're saying you're anti-war, it's the purest creed of saying that's your pure life. I mean, why are we not free to oppose the income tax that spun out of the war tax. When we look at all the spending during the 20th century, most of that, those geometric and exponential spending increases of the U.S. government occurred during and after the wars, and they stick and they stay and they don't go away. And then those bills of war are passed down to our children via the national debt.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that I have a lot of respect for real conservatives, people like Ron Paul. And part of the phrase conservative means being fiscally conservative. And if you can't wrap yourself around your head around the moral imperative to not be involved in constant war, which even comes down to, like, if you're anti-abortion, you should be anti the war we're fighting right now, because they're blowing up wedding parties, and wedding parties are full of young pregnant women. That's, you know, anywhere. There's always pregnant women there. So you are paying for and being in favor of abortion when you're bombing those wedding parties by saying, yeah, go troops, go USA, rah, rah,
and I'll
rah.
Tell you, you know, what really insults me as a former soldier who has spent time overseas is when people say that soldiers died for their freedom. And they justify that by saying, well, I have the ability to engage in political voting. It just makes my head explode.
Yeah.
Because number one, I wrote an article, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where I had the thought experiment. Isn't it curious that even totalitarian regimes have voting? And by the way, usually they require voting. And why do they do that? My conclusion is because they may be totalitarian, but if they allow voting to take place or force voting to take place, anything they do, they could blame it on the people, because yeah. They can say, well, you wanted this and you got it good in heart.
Yeah. And any conservative that is in favor of the unending wars overseas, or the unending war of, you know, the Department of Homeland Security and the Patriot Act, which we call the Jail All the Patriots Act, you know, or the war on drugs, if you're in favor of the war on drugs, if you're in favor of any of that stuff, you're not a conservative, because that is not fiscally conservative. That is absolutely.
And you know,
the
there's only a small cross section of conservatives who call themselves that in the U.S. There's the American Conservative Magazine, which is sort of like neo-isolationist or non-interventionist under Buchanan's.
Yeah, Buchanan blows my mind, because Buchanan, you know, during the Reagan administration, I thought of him. I mean, he was like a prayer partner of Ronald Reagan. I mean, he was like, you know, he is kind of the ultimate square conservative, but he just recently came out as anti-war on drugs because it's not fiscally conservative. You know, he's picking the right tack there.
I agree. And he really broke the ice. I think it was like 7 or 8 years ago when he came out with his book on the unnecessary war concerning World War II, or what I like to call the war to save Joseph Stalin, where he said that our involvement in that had so many implications for bad and evil in the United States that may have been the birthplace of the American surveillance state. But I would put that birth at World War I, not World War II, like Buchanan does, because of things like Woodrow Wilson's American Protectionist League and stuff like that, which was just evil incarnate in what Woodrow Wilson did in the domestic arena to put down what he called anarchist peace activist, anti-war protesters, uppity black folks, things like that.
Yeah. What do you mean by uppity black folks? That's what he called them?
He didn't go so far as to call them that. But remember, pre-World War II America was a segregationist America. And any blacks who were trying to sue for equality, when I say sue, I'm using that in the larger phraseology. Any blacks who said, you know what, we deserve a place at the table. We deserve a place at the front of the bus, not simply the back of the bus. It was just unheard of. And you've heard that song by Billie Holiday called Strange Fruit, right?
Yeah, about hangings, lynchings.
Exactly, lynchings and such. And, you know, before World War II, that was quite common in the South and even the North. Race relations weren't at their best, but you had several folks who were rather uppity, as Woodrow Wilson would call them, because he was a Southern governor who felt that segregation was a virtuous thing, who said, you know what, we're not buying into it. We think that we want to be separate but equal. We want to have the same kind of benefits you do.
Yeah, politicians always want to decide what large groups of people can do, because they're all sociopathic. To even want to run for office, you have to think you're capable of making decisions of life and death for everyone in your...
Kingdom. You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends. Talking with Bill Buppert, who's a retired Army officer. Does a blog called ZeroGov.com. He's written some books. You can find out about them there. What's the name of your book about unicorns?
It's called Zero Gov, Limited Government, Unicorns, and Other Mythological Creatures.
There you go. It's a good book.
Just explains it.
Yeah, from ZeroGov.com. So you're about my age. I'm 50. You're around 50.
54. I'm 54.
Okay.
Now.
What was your, when you were a little kid watching the Vietnam War on TV, what did you think?
You know, I didn't really have a presence of mind to even apprehend what the heck was going on, especially on the televisions that you and I watched then.
Those little black and white things
with
the fuzzy snow. Yeah.
But once I joined the Navy at the age of 17 and then went on board, I had been a product of government schools. So my critical thinking capacity wasn't as high as it should be. And I accepted hook, line, and sinker. All the patriotic nonsense and gore and bad music and all that stuff and
bad music
made stiffened my spine and made me think that, yeah, I better put my hand over my heart and wish the lads well. And I'm so happy all that was going on.
Me too, man. Which was
over time, you just start to question it,
which was weird because I've been anti-war my whole life but was patriotic for a lot of that time and believed. Until I was about 40, I'm 50 now. Until I was about 40, I believed that only the police and military should have guns, but I hated guns. And now I'm surrounded by guns. I love guns. I like them. I have them on me. But I just believe this stuff that people fed me. And it's impossible. It's logically impossible. It's a contradiction to be patriotic, but be anti-war. Because if you're patriotic, you're basically saying my country, right or wrong, and my great men make decisions worth making, which means war, because they're all into war, man. So,
and you don't really see the business end, the pointy end of war. Even when you see it on television, you're not seeing the whole thing. You're not feeling what it's like. You're not, you know, whether it's 35,000 feet up and all you see is the red air bursts, maybe the glowing through the clouds, and you don't know what the heck you've hit. But if you're up close and personal with small arms and direct fire weapons, tanks, armored vehicles, whatever the case may be, you're going to be very shook up no matter how powerful a Sergeant Rock you may think you are by the results of that kind of metal impacting human flesh and what it does to it, especially if that human flesh doesn't have to happen to be toting a rifle, but just so happens to be at a wedding party like you talked about earlier, happens to be a child, happens to be a woman, happens to be somebody, maybe a young man, who has nothing to do with the militants or carrying a firearm or fighting the occupation.
Yeah.
But he may be a cobbler or a store owner or whatever the case may be, and he's getting mauled by all of this. It's a bloody, bloody expensive business that in the end makes the U.S. a much safer place to be than safer, like you hear with all the bromides during Veterans Day. Oh, thanks for making us free so that we can vote for a new plantation owner every 4 years.
Yeah, and patriotism is used by every nation throughout history. Every kid in Russia, you know, every kid in the
Soviet
Union.
America is not alone.
Yeah, every kid in the Soviet Union was taught from a young age that his nation was the greatest. And that's even true of like, you know, Liechtenstein and, you know, Belgium and countries that aren't that big or great or remembered for anything other than, you know, waving Nazis through the border in the case of Belgium. But
yeah, I think people need to read Smedley Butler. You know, he's the one who said war is a racket. It always has been.
What were his military bona fides?
33 years, major general or Lieutenant General in the Marine Corps. He's 33 years and 4 months in active military service. And he spent most of his time as a high-class muscle man for big business, in his words, for Wall Street and the bankers.
Yeah.
In short, as he would say, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I helped make Mexico and especially Tampico safe for American oil interests in 1914. And then he goes on to say all the interests that he helped. And he says the best he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. Yeah. I operated on three continents.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the mafia, man. And a lot of former military people are come out as some of the strongest liberty people when they really see the concepts of it.
They are. There was an informal poll I was telling you about on Reddit Libertarian where they said, how many anarcho-capitalists are former military? And there were 90 respondents.
Wow. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends Talk Radio Musical Extravaganza with Bill Buppert from ZeroGov.com after we go pause for a good cause and take a trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends talking to Bill Buppert from ZeroGov.com.
Bill's be me.
Yeah, that's you. Bill's a retired Army officer. We're talking about the military, about Veterans Day, about veterans, about patriotism.
Bill's a doubter and a skeptic.
There you go. So freedomfiends.com is our website, and we have a blog, freedomfiends.com/blog, or you can go to freedomfiends.com, click on the link on the right sidebar that has a kitty cat at a computer that says blog, and there's a link there, and I'll put all this in the show notes for tonight's show, too. There's a link there. A page, one of the few pages on that site. It's links for those new to liberty. And there are some good podcasts and radio shows and books by John Denson, John Flynn, Jeff Riggenbach, Murray Rothbard, Lysander Spooner, and Bill Buppert is in the Freedom Fiends Book Club.
But keep Riggenbach and Lysander Spooner at the top of your list because those are the gateway drugs, and Denson's books on the U.S. presidency and wars of America are magisterial.
And Jeff Riggenbach's still around, and I've actually tried to get him to do an interview on the show, and he's agreed to do it. But those old school libertarians, man, it's hard to get them to do something. Like
what a radio voice.
Oh man, yeah, he would just like break my voice. He would make me sound he makes me sound reedy and thin by comparison. He's that good.
He does. And he's done great historical revisionism work, and he's got a book on Amazon that I read last year that's just terrific.
Yep. So it is Veterans Day. It's on the tail end of Veterans Day. Bill's a veteran. So give me your bona fides here for hour two again of what you did for Uncle Sam.
Retired from the U.S. Army as a military officer, commissioned officer. Spent most of my time in light infantry, airborne, and special operations forces formation. Most of my time as an intelligence officer. And in my enlisted time, most of that was in the U.S. Navy as an intelligence person. So pretty much intelligence the entire time that I was in. And I think on top of that, something we have to keep in mind here, and you brought this up earlier, and I think I want to name off some statistics here that are going to be mind-numbing. And these statistics, by the way, are provided by the USG from the Congressional Research Service. It's mind-numbing, and it's sickening, and it's a great way to put Veterans Day into perspective. Total U.S. service members wounded in action so far, number approximately 51,000. This is through February of 2014. Total deaths, number approximately 7,000. Total post-traumatic stress disorder, approximately 118,000 claimed. Traumatic brain injury, they're looking at 287,000. The major limb amputations, when you look at the totals, it's just going to make you sick to your stomach because it numbers in the thousands, and it simply shouldn't be that way. And we're talking about amputees who are missing one limb or all limbs. We have the most number of double amputees and multiple amputees from any conflict since World War I in this conflict that's been fought in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Horn of Africa.
And they're being duped into thinking they are fighting for our freedoms. And people hate to hear that, but tell why that's true and why we have less freedoms because of the military-industrial complex.
Well, let's put it in perspective. Since 1893, with the annexation of Hawaii, after the extermination and I guess you could say reservation enhancement of the American Aboriginal population on the North American continent at the time, from sea to shining sea. That was done. So by 1893, the U.S. wanted to join the Colonial Empire Club, and they started with a Hawaiian annexation. 1898, they start with gobbling up the Spanish colonies in the Philippines, Cuba, and Puerto Rico. And then, of course, everyone's familiar with what happened during the 20th century with World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and all the brushfire conflicts since 1945 that the U.S. has engaged in. None of that has made the United States any safer than it was if they had never deployed in the first place. I look to the Swiss model, and I think to myself, why can't we emulate that? Because in the Swiss model, not only is it a cantonment general federalized order in which there are some things the states below the national government can tell the national government, you can take a hike, but we're not going to comply with what you're asking us to do. The Swiss are unique in that, but the Swiss, they export to the world, but they don't export violence to the world. The Japanese are the same for the most part since 1945. And you find that terrorist incidents on their soil are a lot less. We look at Israel as the extreme example. Israel is vaunted as this terrific military with top drawer special operations forces, tank forces with no parallel on planet Earth per capita, all this stuff. But since they have been a nation state in 1948, they have been fighting against a light infantry based, insurgent based, terrorist based foe in Palestine that they have yet to extinguish, and they will not extinguish. Yet, for all the money they spend, for all the military resources that they expend, for all of that, they're still fighting a very visceral conflict. I am in the position that I think 2001 with 9/11 was a result of having embraced what Winston Churchill did in 1920 when he designed these very nice right-angle lines in the Middle East and made people live together who had no desire to live together, nor to be governed by people, members of tribes and blood clans that they wanted nothing to do with. And we find ourselves in a situation where 9/11, 2001, a former government employee, Osama bin Laden, who had worked for the CIA, much like Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, he decides to conduct a jihad based on the Wahhabist tradition, which takes internal struggle in the Quran, which is spiritual struggle, and turns it into a violent struggle against infidels. And they weaponized that. So the bottom line is, freedom isn't granted by going overseas and issuing mayhem destruction on other countries. Freedom is all about minding your own business and being able to opt out if you have to.
Explain how patriotism is used by the religion of statism, by every government, to get people to commit human sacrifices by wanting their young people to go die for Wall Street or the equivalent in any country?
A wonderful question. And let me use the keenest illustration that comes to mind right now, which is that in World War I, no divisions were deployed that were not the Louisiana 10th, the Virginia 9th. And I'm making up those numbers, but they were all state divisions that came up through state levies. By the time World War II came along, the national government got smart and they said, no more of that. If you're the National Guard and you come up, you're going to be in the 82nd Airborne Division. You're going to be in the 101st Airborne Division. You're going to be in the 9th Infantry Division. You are going to be in national divisions. What World War II did with patriotism is they took George Washington's idea of putting a gun in the hands of the national state with the help of Hamilton's machinations in the 1780s and ratified in 1791. And they said, we need to erase any provincial allegiance that human beings have in America, especially young men of age who are military age, and we're going to put them in military formations, and we're going to make their allegiance transcend that of their town, village, city, community, county, and state, and their allegiance will be to the national government. Since World War II, that cancer has done nothing but metastasize and get bigger. Patriotism is the glue and mortar that government uses to erase any questioning of obedience and authority to their total control of the population.
And it is a religion, and it's a dangerous religion. It's not
the most dangerous superstition, as Larkin would tell us.
It's not a good religion. It's a really good evidence of this should be anybody who's listening, who has listened to part of this show and liked it, and then said, to themselves or screamed at the radio, "This goes too far. They're saying bad things about patriotism." We're trying to free you, listeners. We are not trying to enslave you. We are not trying to install some Soviet style, don't be patriotic to America, be patriotic to something else. You should be, you should only, you know, secession down to the last man. You know, anybody who is rooting for something as ill-defined as a nation is co-signing the worst things done by the worst men in that geographic region. And it's done in the name of patriotism, and you will never really be free as long as you're still waving, you know, standing at a, to the authority of the banners and hymns of the church of the state.
You know, I think if you take it down to its distillate, Michael, it all comes down to thinking that the equation immoral means will yield moral ends has virtue and intellectual sensibility.
It does not.
Because it does not. And that's what you and I are saying. You and I are basically saying that if you cannot opt out of war taxes, if you cannot say, nope, I'm not signing up for conscription and stay out of a jail cell, you're not patriotic. You're a prisoner.
Yeah. And, you know, they always say things like, well, if you don't love it, go to Somalia. If you
Isn't
don't
that
love,
curious?
If you don't love government, go to Somalia. Tell me about the government that Somalia has. It does. It is not a governmentless anarchy.
It is not. It's simply warlordism, and it's simply subsidized by the United Nations. And
JSOC and JSOTA fund
and all the rest of it. The entire Horn of Africa is that way. Are there state repellent regions in the world? Yes, there is. There's Zomia that straddles over 6 nation states in Asia, and it's got approximately 150 million square kilometers or something like that. That is state repellent. I love that phrase.
If you don't love it, move to Zomia. That's what people should say.
That's what they should say. Yeah. You know, but isn't it interesting though that the people who want to have a higher degree of prison society, they're the ones who say, "We're the inmates, you get out."
Yeah. Tell me a little about the prison society idea.
I think there's something called the Milgram experiment,
yeah,
and the Stanford experiment, where they basically took college students or people who signed up to do the experiment, and they basically turned them into authoritarian thugs who would do anything that the authoritarian elite told them to, leading to even the wounding and killing, in a figurative sense, of their fellow students or participants in the experiment. You mentioned earlier the Stockholm syndrome. I think it's married to that, where the Stockholm syndrome is where one becomes a hostage, but you start to identify with your captor to an extent where you aid and abet and collaborate with the captor. And I think that's where America is. America is probably Vichy France from the war to save Joseph Stalin at large.
Yeah. Man. So in conclusion, before we go to the break and then the final redemption in the third act, tell me, in a nutshell, why patriotism is not something to embrace and why it is used to hypnotize people and keep them from freedom rather than to bring them to freedom.
You know, patriotism is basically misdirection and illusion.
Yeah, it's a card trick, man. Watch this hand, not this hand. And we'll be back with the redemption in the third act with Bill Biebert from ZeroGov.com on the Freedom Fiends when we get back from this pause for a cause.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends, Redemption in the Third Act. Bill Biebert, our co-host tonight, thinks it's funny that I'm excited by his bona fides of being a retired Army officer, and I mention it almost every episode when we're talking about the military. The reason I do that, Bill and audience, is because it has value, particularly in the format of conservative talk radio, that people should listen to you. You know, if your bona fides were, and here's some guy from Occupy Wall Street telling you why war is bad, people would throw their radios at the wall. But it's interesting to me, and I think to a lot of our listeners, of someone who got to the rank of officer in the Army and who is basically anti-war and definitely anti-war machine. So, Bill, what can we do to make war more rare?
I think what we need to do is John F. Kennedy one of the best quotes he ever had was, "War will exist until that distant day when the conscientious objector enjoys the same reputation and prestige that the warrior does today." I'd like your audience to grok that. And it's a pretty powerful statement. It's also powerful that the whole reason war takes place is because no one questions obedience, much less authority. You and I have spoken in other shows of the importance not only of questioning authority, but the operative thing that makes authority work, which is your obedience to said authority. Now, one thing, if there's anything about the Fiends are very literate folk in the audience. And while we touch on, in the 2 hours that we have this program, these topics, I would say in a superficial way, but in a quick way, because of the time constraints that radio requires, I always like to recommend books. So I want to go off on a slight tangent here and say that if you want to learn why war is such bad business for humanity and always bad business for freedom and liberty, there are three gay authors who will tell you why. Two of those gay authors are Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen from World War I, both poets, terrific poetry that really grapples with the reason why war is not only ugly but harmful to everything that it touches, and the great Gore Vidal, who may have been something of a lefty, but there was no better historian or really critical thinker when it came to looking at the early fundamentals of America. I recommend Burr, I recommend Lincoln, and any number of his American Heritage series that he wrote covering 19th and 20th century America. There's a whole lot to be gleaned from that. And the redemption that we have here is this. We can look this beast in the face, war, and we can say, that's pretty ugly. Why do we want to take our beautiful children and our beautiful grandchildren and toss them into the maw of that beast when in the end, it makes us no safer, it makes us no more free, but maybe worst of all, it makes those who sent them there in the first place far more powerful and far more richer for the experience, and they didn't have to experience any of the bloodiness of it to begin with.
Yeah. I'm amazed how many pro-war Republicans were draft dodgers. Do you know about this?
I do. Like your beloved, what's-his-face there in Wyoming.
My beloved who? Who? Cheney?
The former vice president, Dick Cheney.
Yeah. Let's see.
and among, he was one of the major chicken hawks, one of the best of breed defense intellectuals, much like McNamara, where he talked a real good game, but he had never had a blood stain on him.
Yeah. And Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, Ted
Nugent. Oh, my God. The same thing.
Condoleezza Rice, George W. Bush. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Bush wore the uniform, but he never used it in harm's way, and he never heard the elephant.
He was in North Carolina getting drunk during the war, wasn't he? Vietnam? Something like that.
I think he used other things, too, besides alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. One of my favorite libertarian writers was a Marine in the Vietnam War, Paul Bonneau. Do you know him?
Right, I do.
Writes,
indeed.
Yeah. Writes for Strike the Root. And he it was funny how he got out of going over and getting shot was he joined the Marines, and the Marines, like, you know, they didn't draft people to Marines, you know, it was people that wanted to go join. And he was good with computers, so they made him stay back in Hawaii and operate the computer systems.
Can't beat that.
Yeah. So he was willing to go, but he was on a beach in Hawaii during the Vietnam War. All right. Thank you for your service tonight on the radio, Bill Biepert from ZeroGov.com.
I appreciate that.
Yep. And we'll be back tomorrow night on the Freedom Fiends. Same bat time, same bat channel. And it's going to get better, people, if you let it. War is over if you want it, to quote John Lennon. Worms.